Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Necessary Roughness Podcast, episode number 192, presented by Last Word on Sports. As always, I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic. Hope you all had a fantastic February and well into, well, I guess since I'm Clyde Frazier now, a marvelous March. We've got a lot of news going on in the NFL sphere. We'll talk about some potential rule changes. We'll talk about some weird stories that we missed in the last month here as we're in the monthly schedule for the offseason. And of course, there has been a whirlwind of free agency moves and some trades here and there. So we're going to jump right in to my standout seven. And number one in that standout seven, as best as we can, is going to be a free agency overview slash compilation slash we're going to grade some of these. Right now, admittedly, it would have been pretty simple to do like most networks would do and just do winners, losers, and teams that are inactive or teams that we think should have done more, blah blah blah. But the amount of activity, and look, compared to baseball season's right around the corner, right, and there is a World Series winning pitcher who was, if not an ace, near an ace for the team that won, as well as a former, or sorry, reigning, I guess, technically, a two-time Cy Young winner, still unsigned. But then you have football, where as soon as they are allowed, immediately, as soon as they are allowed to negotiate contracts, contracts for huge players are being signed, inked, trades are being made, and this is kind of the hype, I think. Not to branch off too early in the episode for a tangent here, but this is kind of what people, I think, would want when they talk about in Major League Baseball, how there needs to be sort of a timeline established for when negotiations are done, or maybe a signing window where there's a cap on how long certain things can go, or how long certain things can really bleed on, because here we are well into the meat of spring training and big names are not signed. But we're not here to talk baseball. As much as I love baseball, we are here to talk football. Let's roll through the teams here. I've got NFL.com in front of me here, free agency tracker. We're going to roll through all 32 teams if we can. We'll even talk about the Cowboys, who don't really have anything to talk about. Buffalo Bills, big names here. We get Mac Hollins coming back. Alrighty. Curtis Samuel to the Bills. I like that. I like that move. Curtis Samuel, speed threat. We have the constant hemming and hawing over, will Stephon Diggs be on the team? I don't think Curtis Samuel is a number one, but he's a good weapon to have in the arsenal for a team that's a contender or wants to see themselves as a perennial title contender. Bringing in Trubisky as a backup, okay, you hope he never plays. Deion Dawkins sticking around. He was in the final year of his contract. 3 years, $60.5 million. Samuel's deal, by the way, 3 years, $30 million. An extension for an offensive lineman in David Edwards. They bring back A.J. Epinesa, decent player. Taylor Rapp coming back, three-year contract. Other big things for Buffalo, however, I believe I had them in my cap casualties section here. Maybe not necessarily cap casualty per se, but that's where I jotted it down. Buffalo moving on from Tre'Davious White, which was interesting to me. A good player, always a pretty good player, I would say, but considering the injury history and things of that sort, I guess it's understandable that they would just be in a situation where they should move on, right? Interesting. Keeping it in division, Miami has lost a handful of players so far to free agency, notably Robert Hunt signing a huge contract, I believe, with the Carolina Panthers. We'll get to them in a little bit. What have they done to bounce back? Well, they re-signed Salvin Ahmed. Okay, fair enough. They bring in Jonnu Smith, two-year, $10 million deal. I like Jonnu Smith. I do. He's a part contributor. He's not a huge piece of a title team. They bring in Shaq Barrett on a one-year deal. Shaq Barrett, formerly of Tampa Bay, obviously. Not much moving that has to be done there. But Shaq Barrett coming off of a four-and-a-half sack year in which, you know, he played 16 games. Nothing crazy. Realistically, Shaq Barrett, three good years, 27, 28, 29-year-old season. Now he's going into his 32-year-old season. Let's see if he can bounce back a little bit in those 3 years, by the way. 37.5 sacks for Shaq Barrett. Also bringing in division rivals former safety Jordan Poyer. Big addition. They're in a situation where they're going to have to pay Tua, so it's intriguing to see how much they're going to spend. Where is their title window, considering they're in a division where, right now, New England is weak, right? The New York Jets are in limbo, and you have the Buffalo Bills, who, as I said before, are a quote-unquote title contender every year, but don't seem to make it to the dance. It's doable. Speaking of New England, there's a whole heaping of names here, and if you're a Patriot fan, I'm sure none of them are going to excite you, if I'm being blunt. Jacoby Brissett, who I believe was formerly in New England at one point, returns on a one-year, $8 million deal. Is he going to start for them? Maybe. Presumably, they're going to bring in someone via the draft, and Brissett will be some sort of a mentor, or possibly a stopgap. I've liked Brissett the times he's gotten a chance to get out there. Is he going to knock anyone's socks off? No, of course not. It's sort of in that Gardner Minshew mold, where sometimes he can make enough plays, sometimes you can see why he's on the bench. Re-signing Kendrick Bourne? Okay. Kendrick Bourne, not a bad wideout. Nothing really special this year. Didn't play all the games, obviously. Only played 8 games. But, I mean, career-high 55 catches for 800 yards. Is this somebody that really needs to be a priority when you've got a young quarterback potentially coming in? Well, the regime liked him. They re-up Hunter Henry. They bring in Austin Hooper. Continuing with the trend of building offenses, or personnel rather, that I think they should do some of the old two tight end stuff they used to do when they had Aaron Hernandez and Rob Gronkowski. You know, the stuff that never actually makes it to the football field for the New England Patriots. New York Jets, just as before we started recording this, supposedly made an agreement with Tyron Smith. Older, been injured tackle. He's going to protect the blind side, presumably of Aaron Rodgers, if either of them can get on the field long enough for that to happen. Tyrod Taylor to be your backup, 2 years, $18 million. Zach Wilson on the market. They acquired Morgan Moses from the Baltimore Ravens in a pick swap. Javon Kinlaw, okay, on the D-line. Re-signed Greg the Leg, re-signed their punter. Maybe we'll do it this way. We'll rank the divisions based on the activity. And this is not a ranking of the teams in terms of power ranking, because I would say it would be Buffalo, then Miami, then the Jets, then New England. In terms of the offseason, I guess I would have to say Buffalo wins it as well, bringing in Curtis Samuel, keeping Deion Dawkins, but losing Jordan Poyer and Tre'Davious White, considering, I mean, when you think of Buffalo, you think of their offense, so maybe you'd need pieces more on the defensive side, but they'll lean more into their offense. Miami's lost some players as well, as we said. I'll go Buffalo, Miami, then New England by volume, just because they've signed players. I don't think they're really tremendous players, but they've signed them. The Jets haven't really signed anyone, which could be due to cap situations and things like that. But, yeah, the Jets would have to be on the bottom of that division. Keeping it in the American Football Conference, let's go to the AFC North. The move that I have been saying was going to happen for months, if not longer, talking about way back to the trade deadline, Derrick Henry, 2 years, $16 million, max value of $20 million, $9 up front guaranteed. Derrick Henry to Baltimore. It just makes sense. And they're able to re-sign Justin Madubuike on the D-line. Not bad. Josh Johnson comes in to be a backup who, if you're a Raven fan, you know he might wind up touching the field next year because Lamar Jackson has had some issues with durability. Baltimore, all in all, I think it's a W. I mean, realistically, last year they tried to make a splash bringing in Odell Beckham, and he was, we'll talk about Odell later in the episode, but he was a dud. Tremendously so. Cincinnati, who's going to have their quarterback Joe Burrow coming off of a significant injury for the second time in a half decade. Well, they got rid of Joe Mixon. They brought in Zach Moss. Don't believe he's necessarily going to be the lead back, though he was pretty good in Indy. T. Higgins got the franchise tag. Reportedly not exactly excited about being there. There are rumors swirling that the Bengals could be trying to make a move for Justin Jefferson, which would be bonkers if accurate. The Vikings are in a very weird spot right now. unclear how good that team is going to be. Maybe Justin might want to move on, but I don't know. I mean, how much can Cincinnati give up? What are they going to give him? T. Higgins, and then the Vikings are going to pay T. Higgins? Is that how that's going to go? You're going to give him a boatload of picks? I'm not sure. I'm intrigued to see where Cincinnati goes to get that production back out of the backfield. I don't think just Zach Moss is enough. I like that they kept T. Higgins. It's unfortunate he's a malcontent. We'll see how long that works out. Maybe they'll give him some money. We'll see how it goes. Mike Gesicki at the tight end spot, 1 year, $3.25 million, along with Tanner Hudson re-signing and Drew Sample re-signing. They lost C.J. Uzomah. He wasn't anything, really, for the New York Jets since he's left. I mean, in the 2 years he's been gone, he had 29 catches for the Jets, 21 games started. The year before he left, he had 49 grabs for 493 yards. I'm a Gesicki enjoyer, right? He didn't do much in New England at all. Realistically, his last year in Miami, he didn't do much either. But back in 2021, he had 112 targets, 780 receiving yards. I think he's a pretty good addition. Considering this is a team that has a relatively stacked passing game, he can mix in some grabs here and there. I like it. Sheldon Rankins, sure up the middle of the D-line. Akeem Davis-Gaither re-signs Von Bell. Going to Cincinnati, or sticking in Cincinnati, I believe. Is that a return for Von Bell? I believe... yeah, Von Bell was in Cincinnati, went to Carolina, now he's back in Cincinnati. Geno Stone, stolen away from a division rival in the Baltimore Ravens, which is always a W. Speaking of stealing away from a division rival, the Pittsburgh Steelers now have Russell Wilson as their quarterback. That's not what I'm referencing, though. We'll talk Russell a little bit more detail after this. Patrick Queen, 3 years, $41 million to play for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I like the signing. Donte Jackson, acquired in a trade with the Carolina Panthers for Deontay Johnson and a little bit of a pick swap there. I'll be blunt with you guys. I'm not a huge Deontay Johnson guy. I thought Deontay Johnson had a lot of dropsies in his game. I mean, 21, he goes for 107 catches, 1,161 yards, 8 touchdowns. Those are tremendous numbers. I just don't think realistically he's like a number one receiver or anything. He's a contributor, right? He's not a bad player. It's just this is not a big one for me. This is not a move that really makes waves in terms of Carolina. I know Carolina's receiving core is not very good, so he'll walk in right away and be a good target for Bryce Young. But, I mean, as far as acquirable wide receivers go, he's not super high on the wish list, so to speak. Pittsburgh also picking up Deshaun Elliott at safety, 2 year. Deal. We skipped over Cleveland. 1 year deal for Jameis Winston as Joe Flacco is departing the Cleveland Browns. Jerry Jeudy acquired for a fifth rounder and a sixth rounder. I like Jerry Jeudy. It's weird because, you know, you look at Deontay Johnson and you say, well, Nick, he's put up these stats. He's put up way more in terms of production than Jerry Jeudy. But I don't know. For some reason, when I look at Jerry Judy's upside, I see more. Jeudy entering his age 25 season. Deontay Johnson entering his age 28 season. I think Denver's offense, and look, Pittsburgh offense is not great either. I think for some reason Denver's offense and Jerry Jeudy just didn't click. Now he's going to wind up in Cleveland where nothing has clicked until Joe Flacco was out there. Deshaun Watson and their passing game was not very good. Their offense with him at the helm was not very good. You put Jeudy opposite Amari Cooper. You're talking about Jeudy, former Alabama guy. Amari Cooper, former Alabama guy. Maybe you can, you know, teach him up a little bit. I like it. They didn't give up much. What were they going to get with a fifth and a sixth? Potentially a good player. Hey, I mean, it could be a Hall of Famer in the sixth round. You never know. But for a fifth and a sixth, you're going to get a starting caliber wide receiver for your offense. Something you need. I like the Jameis signing, too. Because Deshaun Watson is not exactly durable and not exactly productive. Jameis Winston's had some durability issues in the past as well, and let's say he's not consistent on the field, but if something happens, push comes to shove, at least he is a starting, adjacent caliber quarterback that you can turn to. They re-sign Za'Darius Smith. I like it. Mo Hurst coming in. Speaking of moving teams in division, Devin Bush going there. There being Cleveland and Jordan Hicks as well. For ranking the AFC North, It's interesting because I almost want to put Pittsburgh first because they're getting Russell Wilson, and I think Russell Wilson was a decent QB in Denver. I'm not saying he's a Pro Bowler. I'm not saying he's as good as he was in Seattle, but now he's got a chip on his shoulder. They didn't have to pay much for him. They bring in Patrick Queen. They get Dante Jackson, helping shoring up their strength. I think in the draft, they need to really help bolster what is kind of a not-so-good offense. But I might put Pittsburgh number one. I'll put Baltimore two, just because Derrick Henry is too good of a fit for me to rank them very low. But honestly, and they bring back Medibike, fair enough. Bengals at three because they're keeping Higgins on the franchise tag for now. I like Rankins. I like Mike Gesicki. I've got Cleveland in last because as much as I like Judy, I can't build it up to be bigger than it is. He hasn't been super productive as a wide receiver thus far. It's a little bit of a flyer. Let's see what happens. AFC South, the division winner, the Houston Texans, are the team that acquired Joe Mixon and re-upped him since acquiring him. They also re-upped Dalton Schultz. And they signed Danielle Hunter away from the Minnesota Vikings. They also brought in Delshawn Phillips, Mike Ford, re-signed Desmond King II. They bring in Jeff Okuda, who's had an up-and-down career thus far, and they re-signed Kaimi Fairbairn at kicker. I like it. I think they need more talent at wide receiver. I like Dalton Schultz. I like Joe Mixon. I mean, they lose Devin Singletary to the Giants. We'll mention that later, but Mixon, I would say, is better than Singletary. It's interesting to me that they haven't made a move in the receiver market. I mean, we see Hollywood Brown signing a one-year deal with the Kansas City Chiefs. I could have seen Hollywood Brown fitting in a lot of these teams' offenses just as a deep threat. But I guess when you're Hollywood Brown, you know what? Why not? I'm going to go play for a team that I know is probably going to put me in good position to contend for a title. Let's take a flyer. Their quarterback can throw the ball over those mountains. Let's see what happens. Speaking of let's see what happens, the Colts bringing in Joe Flacco. One-year deal up to $8.7 million, $4.5 million guaranteed. Yeah, he's going to be the backup. It's interesting. They lose Gardner Minshew very early in free agency, and I say very early like we're not 3 or 4 days in, but they lost Gardner Minshew much quicker than I think they probably anticipated, so they go to Flacco. I would say the weird thing is, I mean, you can't really run the same offense with Anthony Richardson and Joe Flacco. Not that Gardner Minshew was running around much like Richardson was, but I guess Flacco's a veteran. He's been there and done that. They'll bring him in to be a mentor, and hopefully Richardson can stay on the field this time. Let's see what happens. Big win for the Colts is the extension for Michael Pittman. I'm a Michael Pittman enjoyer. I think he's tremendous at wide receiver. 3 years, $70 million. Take a look at Michael Pittman's stats this past year. Considering they were rolling with a backup QB for quite a bit of the last season, he still winds up with a career high in receptions, a career high in receiving yards, 109 catches, 1,152 yards, and 4 touchdowns. Touchdowns could be a little bit higher, considering, I mean, Michael Pittman is 6'4". But, yeah, good signing for the Colts. They also re-upped Grover Stewart on their D-line. They signed Zaire Franklin, and they re-upped Kenny Moore in the secondary. Jacksonville, fresh off of not winning a very winnable division, well, what did they do? They signed away Gabe Davis from the Buffalo Bills. Well, is Curtis Samuel going to be able to fill in for everything that Gabe Davis did? I don't know. They kind of have a different profile, I would say. Gabe Davis, I don't think, is as quick and shifty as Samuel is, but he's been very productive at receiver, pairing him, and he's going to be filling in for Calvin Ridley. So there's a lot of moving parts. That's one of the reasons this episode, I'm going to be completely honest with you and up front, it's going to be a little bit of a clown fiesta as we move through the league. It's a little bit easier to do this in more of a written format, but doing it as a show and making sure we wanted to touch on as many teams as possible, it's a little challenging. So admittedly, if it feels like we're bouncing around a lot, sorry about that. Just trying to cover everybody and cover as much of these moves as we could. Back to the matter at hand, the Jacksonville Jaguars bringing in Gabe Davis. I don't think Gabe Davis is an upgrade over Calvin Ridley at all. I like Gabe Davis. I think he was productive in Buffalo, but he was never the number one. He was never the guy that had to be the guy in their offense. I mean, last year he's coming off of 45 catches for 740 yards. The reason you know Gabe Davis is because he had a huge playoff game, right? You take a look at Curtis Samuel's stats, 62 catches for 613 yards, 4 touchdowns in a bad offense in Washington. Comparable, arguably. Calvin Ridley, on the other hand, was a 1,000-yard receiver with 8 touchdowns. Before his suspension, he was a 1,000-yard receiver with 9 touchdowns. First 2 years of his career, he had 1,700 yards, about, for 17 touchdowns. I mean, he's productive. He's tremendous, Calvin Ridley, and it's hard to replace him. I guess this is the best they could do, considering the price range they were in, 3 years, $39 million. Max of 50 if he hits all the incentives, which would be hard to do, considering, well, I mean, look around in this offense. They also brought in Devin Duvernay. Okay, I like it. Devin Duvernay hasn't exactly panned out in Baltimore. Change of scenery might be it, but I don't think there's a significant amount of talent there on the offensive side. More of a Pro Bowl. Rather, he's been a Pro Bowler as a special teamer, but okay, let's see what you can do. They bring in Mac Jones, in a trade for a sixth-round pick. Why are they bringing in Mac Jones? I have no idea. I don't like it at all. I'm not a Mac Jones hater. I think Mac Jones eventually may get another chance to play on an NFL field as a starting quarterback. I'm not sure why a team in Jacksonville that realistically should be seeing themselves as fresh off of a fluke season, they should have been a playoff team, I don't know why they would even... I mean, I'd rather pick somebody in the sixth round. Let's see what we can do. Who's the fastest guy available right now? Who's the strongest O-lineman left? Who's the biggest tight end we could find at a D2 school right now? I mean, Mac Jones? All right, cool. Maybe they'll flip him in a few years, but... They bring in Ezra Cleveland to help shore up the O-line, theoretically, as well as Mitch Morse. I like it. Commit to Travis Etienne. Commit to running the rock a little bit. Etienne... 1,000-yard rusher, 11 touchdowns, pretty good catching the ball out of the backfield as well with 58 grabs for 476. Not a bad idea to commit to him and shoring up the O-line so he can run the ball a little better. On the defensive side, they bring in Arik Armstead, from San Francisco, big signing. 3 years, $51 million, I love it. Darnell Savage from Green Bay, pretty good player as well on a 3-year deal. I like it for Jacksonville. Tennessee has had an interesting... free agency as we push into the end here of our third AFC division. Tennessee signed Mason Rudolph, 1 year, $2.8 million. That's okay. You know, it's not significant, you could argue. It's just a backup QB, fair enough. Presumably going to be Will Levis's show for the next season at the least. Then they signed Tony Pollard, and I like Tony Pollard. I do. Maybe I should say I liked Tony Pollard. I mean, he ran for 1,000 yards this past year. He did. But his yards per attempt was down significantly. He didn't seem to really have that same explosiveness, and this is a guy that was coming back from, you know, an injury that he sustained in the postseason. Interesting. I think Tony Pollard can bounce back. I think Tony Pollard is a pretty good back. He is. He's not Saquon Barkley. Could you make the argument he's in that same class as Joe Mixon? I might put Joe Mixon above him, if I'm being completely honest. I don't think Joe Mixon is a shut-it-down superstar running back, but Mixon can catch the ball. Mixon's had 4 1,000-yard seasons in his career. Tony Pollard was a great change of pace for Zeke. I like it. I like them bringing him in, because they have a hole at running back, obviously, with Derrick Henry gone, but bringing in Tony Pollard... I think it's going to be a significant sort of change of pace. You know, Derrick Henry, let's run downhill, let's do it. Tony Pollard, you're going to have to open up some holes. And he's going to have to, you know, he's not going to be dragging the pile like a Derrick Henry. Let's see what they could do. Calvin Ridley, 4 years, $92 million. Feels like a lot. It feels like a lot. But Calvin Ridley, when you take a look at the Titans offense, or the lack thereof, this past season. I mean, let's be realistic here. When Levis was out there winging the ball around, there was significant chunks of time there where he's looking for an aging DeAndre Hopkins as his go-to guy. Nothing against DeAndre. I think he's still got some left in the tank, but I don't think DeAndre at this point in his career is a number one wideout. I don't. I could be wrong. I could be proven elsewise. I think he's still a great route runner. He's got good hands, but I think the athleticism is leaving him a little bit, and I think a team where he could be a number two and really help bolster, you know, by being a consistent, reliable wideout rather than being the go-to guy every time. Their number two wideout was their tight end, Chigi Okonkwo. Good player. I like him, but if he's your number two wideout, you're not going anywhere. You're not. So they needed to add at wide receiver. They felt Ridley was the move. All right, let's see how it goes. 4 years, $50 million for Lloyd Cushenberry on the O-line. 2 years, $16 million for Kenneth Murray at linebacker. And Chidobe Awuzie, 3 years, $36 million in the secondary. Winners and losers of this division. Well, it's hard. Because I guess the winner... They all have highs and lows here. If we're taking the lottery ticket winner, I could say Tennessee. Calvin Ridley could be tremendous for them. Tony Pollard, he had 1,000 yards last year. Honestly, that's more than I thought he had, having watched the Dallas Cowboys offense. 17 games will do that to you. But no, in all seriousness, he's a great back. When he was on, when he was the change of pace guy, if he can turn his game into being that consistently as the lead back, uh-oh. Will Levis showed some flashes. If he can take another step, if he's got good chemistry with Ridley, could be a good team. You know what? I'll put Tennessee number one. Why not? Then I'll go Jacksonville. I like Arik Armstead a lot. I like Gabe Davis. Is he going to be a number one? I don't think so. But I like Arik Armstead. I like Darnell Savage. Adding to their defense. Big moves. Then we'll go Indy, I guess, keeping Michael Pittman, adding a little bit on the defensive side, and then Texans in last. I think they need to add more wide receiver. You know what? No, we're going to flip-flop that. I forgot the Texans brought in Danielle Hunter. They're going to jump all the way above the Jags. I forgot about Danielle Hunter, and I just said it a handful of minutes ago here. We'll go Danielle Hunter and Joe Mixon above Arik Armstead and Gabe Davis. So we're going Titans on a lottery ticket, then the Texans, then the Jags, then the Colts. Bringing in Joe Flacco doesn't do anything for me. Michael Pittman, I love it, but come on. He's your guy. He was already in the building. Got to keep your guys if you're going to win, if we're being completely honest, but it's not going to knock anyone's socks off. Admittedly, folks, we're running a little long on this segment. So what we're going to do here is we're going to start wrapping them up and just hitting the heavy hitters and going as quick as we can here. Denver Broncos offseason. You haven't missed that much so far. They got rid of Russell Wilson. They re-signed their kicker. They're probably in last in this division. Kansas City, bringing in Marquise Hollywood Brown. I like it a lot. Deep threats play well here. They need a legitimate number one wideout. A legitimate wideout. Like, I'm begging you. There's no way. I mean, I get it. They won it all. You know what? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm completely wrong. But, like, it feels like lightning striking twice. Maybe lightning strikes three times. They bring in Irv Smith. I like Irv Smith. Athletic, pretty good receiving tight end. Just to be a second tight end to Kelsey. Take a little bit of a load off him. Chris Jones gets an extension. Can't complain about that. Huge money. 5 years, $158 million. $101 million guaranteed. Legarius Sneed, non-exclusive franchise tag. They tell him to go look for a trade. We'll see what happens there. Obviously, losing Sneed would be massive. As of recording this, they have not lost him yet. Raiders brought in Gardner Minshew, 2 years, $25 million. What are the Raiders doing at quarterback? I don't know. I like Minshew. I don't like their offense. I was under the impression that Devontae Adams would be getting dealt. Maybe that was just me imagining things, but they lost Josh Jacobs. They brought in Amir Abdullah. Oh, wait, that's a re-signing. Like, they can draft a running back. That's completely fine as well, but I don't know. 4 years, $110 million for Christian Wilkins on the D-line. Good player, sure. The Chargers have had a very weird offseason, going with Jim Harbaugh, obviously, at head coach, But then they have moved on from Mike Williams, not too far after re-signing Mike Williams. They have then traded Keenan Allen to the Chicago Bears, and they signed the Gus Bus at running back. So the Chargers are in last by way of they've lost their top two wide receivers. Then we have Denver, because their biggest move was cutting someone. Then I guess we have the Raiders, because they brought in Christian Wilkins. Cool, they're in second place. They bring in Minshew. Maybe he'll be their starting QB. The Chiefs, by way of being the defending champs and keeping potentially two of their big names, and bringing in Hollywood Brown. Sure, why not? NFC East, shockingly, it's going to be hard, but I'm going to make the case maybe. No, I can't. The Cowboys got to be in last, right? On the NFC side now, by the way, we're done with the AFC. We would do a whole thing, but that's fine. We don't need to do a power ranking of free agent signings for an entire conference. It's March, guys. Basketball is well underway. Baseball's about to be around the corner. It's exciting. It's fun to talk about this stuff, but we don't need to dig too deep. You can win the offseason and lose games. It happens all the time. You can lose the offseason and do pretty well. The Dallas Cowboys are hoping that's going to be the case for them this upcoming season. Obviously, some significant off-the-field things going on with Dak Prescott. Look that up at your own leisure. We'll try to keep it between the lines when we can. Cowboys haven't signed really anyone. Their biggest signing, linebacker Eric Kendricks. Okay. The New York Giants lose Saquon Barkley in division to the Eagles, who also acquired Kenny Pickett. Acquired Devontae Parker, who I think they said statistically is like one of the worst receivers in the last 4 years at getting separation, which is not a stat you want to be a leader in at all at wide receiver. But you know what? Good enough for the Eagles, I guess. They sign Albert O to an extension. They extend Landon Dickerson on their O-line, which is a big move now that Jason Kelsey has moved on. Congratulations to Jason Kelsey on his retirement, by the way. I don't think we've mentioned that. They re-up Brandon Graham. They sign Bryce Huff, 3 years, $51 million. They sign Julian Okwara, Devin White, good signing. They bring back CJ GJ from the Detroit Lions, 3 years, $33 million. Not a bad offseason for the Philadelphia Eagles. The Commanders sign everyone and anyone without actually really improving their team much. They sign Marcus Mariota, 1 year, $6 million. This came at or around the same time as them trading Sam Howell to the Seattle Seahawks, which is very interesting to me because I think Howell's got some talent, and I think maybe that team in Seattle may know that as well. Austin Eckler signs a two-year deal, 2 years, $11.4 million with the Commanders. Eckler, it's interesting because it was a crowded running back market, and I think that really hurt him. He's also coming off of his worst season probably since 2020, and in 2020 he only played 10 games. Yards per attempt were under 4 yards for the first time in his career, entering his age 29 season now. Had 51 grabs last year. Also, you got to remember, Justin Herbert gets hurt, completely changes the complexion of the way the defenses are viewing their offense. The 2 years prior, the guy was a 900-yard running back with 600-plus receiving yards. It's probably a good get for Washington, but you get a little weary signing a guy after his worst year. They signed Zach Ertz, who, I mean, didn't he get signed with Arizona and then get traded last year? I imagine this will be a similar situation. They bring in a couple of O-linemen, a couple of D-linemen, four edge rushers. They signed Bobby Wagner. They signed Frankie Louvu at linebacker as well. They signed Jeremy Chinn on a very short-term contract, which is interesting to me because when I think of Jeremy Chinn, I think of him as being a pretty good player, but 1 year, $4.1 million. Maybe I'm just a little behind on the times. Hard to keep track of everybody. Then you have the New York Football Giants. Lost the aforementioned Saquon Barkley. They replace him with Devin Singletary, who I've been saying on this program for years is a pretty good back. Do I think he's tremendous? No, but I think he's good enough that Buffalo should have ran the ball more when he was there. And I think as a supplementary piece, as a complementary running game leader, he's pretty good. I mean, the last 3 years, he's been 870, 819, and 898 on the ground. 4.6 yards per carry, 4.6 yards per carry, 4.2 yards per carry. at or around 200 yards receiving. So he's a 1,000-yard contributor in your offense. Pretty good player. Good signing. Will he fill the gap left by Barkley? Not at all. Barkley has, I would say, more home run potential, more, what do you want to use the modern term? Like, the NBA term of, like, he's got defensive magnetism, you know? They're looking for him when he's on the field. They're trying to defend against him. They know he's a main threat. I would say necessarily you don't get that out of Singletary, but, you know, save them some money, and that's what they wanted to do at the running back position. Giants also signed Drew Lock, presumably to compete with Tommy DeVito and Daniel Jones. I was a Drew Lock fan. I thought he'd be pretty good in Denver. Shipped out to Seattle. Let's see if the seasoning helps. I think it's honestly reasonable to think he could beat Daniel Jones in a competition. Jones has shown more on the NFL field, and you won't hear me say that very often, but Drew Lock has a pretty good skill set as well. Let's see what happens when it comes time for OTAs. Giants signing Isaiah McKenzie. Okay, sure. The intriguing thing about the Giants bringing in Drew Lock is, I guess, the implication that they're not going to draft a quarterback, maybe? I don't know. Because they're rolling with Jones and Lock right now, but realistically, maybe it's been too expensive in their efforts to try and trade up in the NFL draft. I'm not sure. They could be in the market for a wide receiver. If they're looking to sit at 6, they could wind up with a wide receiver. That could be the move. They probably won't get Marvin Harrison Jr., but I don't know if they're necessarily thinking they can get him anyway. So maybe they're content with getting Isaiah McKenzie, and they'll bolster it with a Neighbors or the wide receiver who played with Michael Penix in Washington. His name escapes me. But sure, they bring in John Runyon on the O-line. Okay. Huge trade to bring in Brian Burns. They go for a 2 and a 5, and they give Burns a 5-year, $150 million deal. I heard some people ripping this. I think it's a good deal. Not necessarily the contract per se, but the trade. A 2 and a 5, they've got draft capital. You're bringing in probably one of the better pass rushers in the league. I mean, is he an Aaron Donald or another player who's recently retired? Congratulations to him. We wish him nothing but the best. But, no, is he TJ Watt? No, he's not TJ Watt. But he is a guy who's gone out there, and in the last 5 seasons, every year of his career, 7.5 sacks, 9 sacks, 9 sacks, 12.5, and 8. And you're pairing him with Kayvon Thibodeau, who took a huge leap in terms of sack production in his second year. His first year, he had 4. He had a lot of hurries. Second year, 11.5. Thibodeau opposite from Burns. He can learn from Burns. Burns still young, entering his age 26 season. I like it for the defense. I really do. I am concerned, as per usual, about the Giants' offense, right? And they lost Wink Martindale, so maybe I should be concerned about their defense as well. But no, in all seriousness, on the offensive side, you have Darren Waller saying he might retire, and then they broke the news that he's coming back, and then he goes, I haven't decided yet. Okay, whatever that means. Sure. Biggest loser in the division, it's got to be Dallas via inactivity, right? Then I would say maybe it's a tie. It's probably the Giants because they lost their running back, but they did bring in Brian Burns. Someone could make the argument bringing in Burns is more significant than the slew of mid-tier talent Washington has brought in. Admittedly, I would not. I would say Washington gets the edge. Because you bring in this many players, somebody's got to make an impact, right? It's probably not going to be Mariota, but he's not that old, if we're being honest. It might be Eckler. Maybe it'll be Biadasz on the O-line with Allegretti. Maybe it'll be Cleveland Farrell figuring it out as a pass rusher. Maybe it'll be Bobby Wagner just being an anchor on their defense. I don't know. The winner's got to be Philly. They bring in Barkley. It's the big ticket. They're a running offense. You need a good running back to run the ball. The other thing being, obviously, DeAndre Swift no longer with the team. Pretty good year. Some would argue, a lot would argue, didn't get the ball enough down the stretch, if we're being frank. Off of a 1,000-yard season, what better way to fill that than with another 1,000-yard running back? Keeping Landon Dickerson is big. Bringing back CJ GJ, who was better in Philly. Good win for them. They'll bounce back. Speaking of DeAndre Swift, onto the NFC North, he went to the Chicago Bears, who also acquired the aforementioned Keenan Allen. Big gets. They bring in Gerald Everett. You know this program is a fan of him. Big one. They bring in Amen Ogbonbemiga at linebacker, which is an all-name team, either nominee or winner. I can't even remember. They re-sign Jalen Johnson. They bring in Kevin Byard, also of Philly. Yeah, pretty good offseason for the Bears. The only thing missing is they still haven't made a call on Justin Fields. And the big botch there is, well, spoiler, we'll get to Atlanta later. Atlanta picked up a quarterback already, and so did the Pittsburgh Steelers. Well, who's left? Tampa Bay already re-signed Baker Mayfield. Are they going to deal him to the Giants? I'm not so sure about that. Reporting passing down, I believe it was via ESPN, is that certain teams are now interested in him as a backup quarterback. Well, considering the stage he's at in his career and where he's going to be pushing into his next contract, it's going to be really weird to be developing him, what, just to let him walk? Is he going to get on the field? People were saying maybe Seattle as a backup, but then Seattle acquired Sam Howell. The team that would fit is Minnesota. The problem? Same division. If he plays well for Minnesota and he re-signs it with Minnesota to be spiteful, he might outshine whoever you pick as the number one pick just by way of being ahead of him with progression as reading an NFL defense and things like that. It'd be a lot of egg on the face. Detroit brings back Graham Glasgow on the O-line, brings back Dan Skipper, signs DJ Reader, helps shore up the run-stuffing end of the defense. They acquire Carlton Davis from the Buccaneers, which I didn't see coming. Good add. Relatively quiet offseason, but it's a team that quite honestly could have been in the Super Bowl. Should have been in the Super Bowl if they got out of their own way. Green Bay brings in Josh Jacobs, 4 years, $48 million. Then they get rid of Aaron Jones, who goes to Minnesota. Interesting. They re-sign A.J. Dillon. I think Jacobs is an upgrade over Jones. Jones getting a little older, but Jacobs has had injuries as well. Not so sure. They also bring in Xavier McKinney from the New York Giants. 4 years, $68 million. McKinney has since said, I wanted to play with an elite quarterback. You need an elite quarterback to win games. He believes Jordan Love is going to take that step, and obviously Daniel Jones is not. Minnesota brings in Sam Darnold. No way Sam Darnold starting next season for them. They bring in Aaron Jones. That's really it. They sign Andrew Van Ginkel. They sign Jonathan Greenard. Okay. They sign Blake Cashman. All right. Sure. The loser of the division, I would say, is probably Minnesota. They lose their starting quarterback, and their answer is Sam Darnold. They bring in Aaron Jones. Their running game wasn't great last year. Maybe he'll help. But they're a ways away from being a contender, I would say. Then, admittedly, I would put Detroit. I like Carlton Davis. I really do. But no big waves really made. But honestly, like I said before, no big waves really needed. Good team. The winner, I'll put Chicago over Green Bay. Green Bay's got their quarterback. Josh Jacobs versus Aaron Jones. I think Jacobs is an upgrade, but is it super-duper significant? I think they need a receiver. I seem to be saying that a lot. The Bears got their receiver in Keenan Allen, who, you know, I haven't been the biggest Keenan Allen supporter, but he's a darn good wide receiver that's kind of undeniable, in my opinion. You add in DeAndre Swift in the backfield, add in Gerald Everett, add in Kevin Byard. I think they got a good amount better here in the off season. That'll bring us to the NFC South. Two more divisions to go, folks. Don't worry. We are getting there. The Falcons, Kirk Cousins, huge. They bring in Ray-Ray McCloud, okay. They sign away Darnell Mooney from the Bears. All right, people told me Darnell Mooney was tremendous. We'll see next year. They get Rondale Moore in a trade with the Cardinals for Desmond Ridder in a trade that makes no sense. And I don't mean for them. It makes perfect sense for them, but Rondale Moore is a pretty good deep threat. I mean, I know he's coming off a year where he didn't have many yards. His career high is 400 yards. He's not a super route runner, I guess. You know, but his explosiveness and his speed, you're telling me you couldn't find a place for him? I mean, the guy had 350 yards last year, but he had almost 200 yards rushing, like on 28 carries. You couldn't find a place for Rondale Moore in your offense. You need Desmond Ridder. For what? Nothing against Desmond Ridder. I think he's a decent NFL caliber quarterback. I don't think he'll wash out of the league after next season, but I thought Kyler was their guy. I thought they made that clear. So if Kyler's your guy, what do you need Desmond Ridder for? What do you need to trade a receiver for a backup quarterback? When does that ever make sense? Carolina, they bring in Robert Hunt, which we talked about before on the O-line, as well as Damian Lewis. They bring in Deontay Johnson, as we mentioned before. On the D-line, they bring in Kalavon Chaisson, DJ Wonnum, and A'shaun Robinson. Okay. They bring in Jordan Fuller at safety. All right. The Saints, very quiet as well. Two-year deal with DeMario Davis, a deal with Willie Gay Jr., an extension for Tyrann Mathieu, and a deal with Cedric Wilson. Tampa Bay is a huge one. Tampa Bay re-ups Chase Edmonds, Mike Evans, Baker Mayfield, Lavonte David, Jordan Whitehead, Antoine Winfield via the non-exclusive franchise tag. That's huge. I'd say the loser of the division would be New Orleans via inactivity, then Carolina. Honestly, this might shock. You know what? No, we'll give Atlanta number one. They got their QB. I was going to put Atlanta number two because I think Tampa Bay keeping all their guys in a division that they won is huge. But we'll give Atlanta number one. We'll put Tampa number two because I you know, I'm saying inactivity knocks you down, but re-signing your guys is not nothing. And those are guys, you know, Mike Evans, Chase Edmonds, Lavonte David, pieces that were there, and Antoine Winfield as well, and Whitehead, pieces that were there for a Super Bowl run, and a lot of teams can't say that. NFC West. Cardinals bringing in Desmond Ridder, oh yeah. DJ Dallas at running back. Chris Moore at wide receiver. A slew of O-line and D-linemen, as well as Chris Barnes at linebacker. Sean Murphy Bunting at corner. The Rams losing Aaron Donald is massive. They bring in Jimmy Garoppolo, who cares? They signed Colby Parkinson to a three-year deal that admittedly made me look up Colby Parkinson to see if I was thinking of the right guy, and I am. He was really a bit player in Seattle, but for some reason they see some upside there. All right, you know what, maybe in their scouting they saw a way he was being underutilized, and it's a position that Matt Stafford, you know, he likes to throw to the tight end. Let's see what you can do, and they've had some injuries on and off with Higbee and their tight ends in the past. They re-signed Kevin Dotson. They bring in Jonah Jackson. They signed Darius Williams at corner and Cameron Curl at safety. All right. The defending NFC champions, what do they do? Well, on the offensive side, not much. They re-sign Brandon Allen, backup QB. They bring in a couple of O-linemen. They lose Arik Armstead on the D-line, but they sign Yetur Gross-Matos and Leonard Floyd. They acquire Malik Collins in a trade with the Houston Texans. They bring in Devondre Campbell, Isaac Yiadom, and George Odom. Not a big offseason. And the Seahawks bring in Sam Howell, re-signed Noah Fant, bring in Pharaoh Brown, re-signed Leonard Williams, and that's the end of the division. I would say the winner, this is rough, the winner might be nobody. The winner, by way of, I guess, default, is San Francisco. The other ones, I'm not really crazy about the deals. I think maybe the Colby Parkinson thing could be a big one. For some reason, that deal sticks out to me. Jonah Jackson's a good get for them as well. The Cardinals signed a whole slew of players. Admittedly, I'm not sure how much it's going to do. The Seattle Seahawks, I like Sam Howell. I think he's pretty good, but is he going to start this year? If he's starting, something went wrong in Seattle, I would imagine. Yeah, not great. That's the end of our free agent extravaganza. Man, that was a long first segment in the Standout 7. We'll try to speed through some of the other things here. We were supposed to speculate on some remaining players and some trades. I'm not sure we'll do that, considering we spent 40 minutes on free agency. We'll skip straight through to the NFL draft is coming up. It's exciting. The NFL draft, by the way, is going to be April 25th through the 27th. Our next episode is going to be the following week. We could do a draft preview episode, but I think it's a little bit more fun of sorts to do a draft recap, things that are going to be exciting, storylines to look out for in the upcoming season. So we'll do our next episode, and I'll probably mention this in the sign-off in case you forget, and it'll be in the description, so you've probably already seen it, but our next episode is going to be Friday, May the 3rd. Another thing Potential NFL rule changes. There was some smoke around a potential 18-game season, which we know has been the end game for the NFL for a while. Will we get an 18-game season? Well, we saw Kayvon Thibodeau talking about, well, we don't want that second bye week. We want some of that gambling money because the NFL, much like all the other sports leagues in America, are really, really, really leaning into their partnerships with Vegas and some of the sports books, and there's marketing for it on every network, it seems, including articles written left, right, and sideways about good picks and underdogs and teams that are overvalued and things like that. Admittedly, I got no beef with gambling. I really, if you're a consenting adult and you want to take a chance on the actions of another human being, look, outside of hosting this show for, I believe, what is now 8 seasons, I genuinely believe one of the hardest things you can do is try and predict the behavior of another human being, right? You're basing it off of current performance or past performance. You're completely projecting. We've had rants on this show multiple times about this, by the way, but we're going to about to get another one potentially. Potential is that dirty word, right? I talked about it ad nauseum in the segment we just did. I think potentially Colby Parkinson could. I think potentially Sam Howell could. You know, potentially these additions could be good. We're looking at their past actions. We have no idea how they're going to fit in. We have no idea if they just took it for the money. We have no idea if they still want to play the game. So I would not bet a dime on those things, right? I can understand where Thibodeau and the NFL players would come from, though, because there are a lot of people who fancy themselves an amateur Nostradamus, present company included, I guess, and there's a lot of money changing hands as the sports books become allowed and legalized in more and more states. New York, namely, a couple of years ago, which is a huge bump to profits for even FanDuel, DraftKings, all those places. So I can get why they'd want a piece of that pie, but not sure they're going to get that one. The idea of the second bye week is interesting to me. Some people have floated, well, you're going to do the second bye week, why don't we have a proper NFL All-Star weekend, so to speak, in the middle of the season? I'm not sure they're interested in that. I'm not sure they really care if the Pro Bowl does well, right? Like, it's an accomplishment you list on the back of the football card. You need to have a Pro Bowl. You need to have an All-Pro team. It's a thing that all other leagues have. But admittedly, I don't necessarily think it's a main concern for the NFL if the ratings are good or if the fans like it or whatever. Especially hot off of the NBA All-Star weekend more recently, where the fans were very critical of the All-Star dunk contest and people were talking about the shootout between Steph Curry and Sabrina Ionescu and using the same ball or using the same line or blah, 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 blah. I'm not sure that really affects the bottom line for the NFL, so I'm not sure we're going to get anything on that. The thing I'm interested in, per NFL on CBS, and this is a while ago because we were a month off, they were considering, they being the NFL, the XFL kickoff rule. Yep. This would be the player lining up, excuse me, the kicker, lining up at his own 30, kicking off. 10 players of either team line up at the opposing, the receiving 35. They are lined up at the receiving 30 for the receiving team, and the kicking, excuse me, the receiving 35 for the kicking team, face-to-face. The kicker and the returner are the only players who can move until the ball is fielded. Touchbacks are placed at the 35-yard line, so you are incentivized to not kick the ball through the end zone. Obviously, you still have the same rule with kicking the ball out of bounds. It's interesting to me. And the other thing would be, you don't really gain anything from doing a pop-up kick either, because the players on either team aren't allowed to move till it's fielded. So doing a pop-up kick would allow the return man, theoretically, to get a running start through the ball, right? Easier than if he had to field a normal kickoff on the run. Interesting. I've been an advocate for it for a while. Since it was introduced, honestly, I think it was one of the best ideas to come out of the XFL or any of these, the Spring Football League, USFL. All of these leagues have interesting twists, whether it be the 1-2-3-point conversion. I don't love that. But I do like this kickoff rule. And then obviously the tandem rule would be the onside kick is completely changed. One of the proposals, which was supposedly floated, was having to declare your onside kick in advance when you're going to do it, or even potentially only being able to onside kick if you're down in the second half. That was preposterous. I don't see that getting implemented. I don't like that at all. Under the guise of safety, I guess I could understand it, but the onside kick is so inefficient right now, and yeah. Just go to the XFL, where I believe it was the XFL. 4th and 20 from your own 15, or 4th and 15 from your own 20, something like that. If you can convert it, you can keep the ball. Sure, let's do that. Significantly better, in my opinion. Next in the standout 7, and I won't say a number because admittedly I've lost track of the numbers. I believe this is 5, but we did skip 2. Some smoke around whether the Russell Wilson trade was the worst trade ever. I tell you what, it certainly wasn't a good trade. It really wasn't. And admittedly, in the grand scheme, I'm not sure it's the worst professional sports trade ever. It is one of the worst NFL trades I can remember. And I will say this, and if you go back, I think we've talked about this like 15 times on the show since the extension was signed. It might be the worst contract extension ever signed, ever, in the NFL and or in pro sports. And I don't think Russell Wilson is washed up. I don't think he's an awful player. Russell Wilson played his first season in Denver in 2022. Before that even happened, he was given a 5-year, $242 million extension with $161 million guaranteed. This was completely unnecessary as he was already under contract through the 2023 season. For some reason, Denver looked at their roster and was anticipating having a tremendous year with Russell Wilson, and they thought, you know what, let's lock him up now. Let's get a benefit. Let's get a bargain, right? It was not a bargain, and the team was not good, and he played for 2 coaches in 2 years, and now he'll be playing for his 3rd, and he'll be wearing a different uniform, and Denver will be compensating him to do so. Other awful contracts that come up off the top of my head, the classic one being like the Carl Pavano deal with the New York Yankees, Jason Bay with the New York Mets, maybe Carlos Rodon, who's currently with the New York Yankees, Chris Bryant, who's with the Colorado Rockies, horrible deals. There are plenty of max players in the NBA who just straight up do not deserve that money, but money is thrown around left and right in the NBA. Obviously, there's less players, so it's easier to compensate, easier to raise those salary numbers, so to speak. I know the NFL salary cap this year is going to be $255 million, but you still have to pay 50 players, right? 53, 55, whatever. In the NBA, you're paying like 12 guys, 15 guys counting inactives. You got to fill up the money somehow, and every team seems to have a max player or a close-to-max player that may or may not be worthy of it. Number 6 in the standout 7, this one is spicy, and that's why I wanted to throw it in. Jarrett Bailey, Jay Bailey NFL on X.com. I say this with no disrespect to him whatsoever because it's not his fault. The most overrated player in the history of the NFL, and this was reposted by FanDuel Sportsbook, speaking of gambling, Odell Beckham Jr. Now, admittedly, I am pushing my mid-20s. I couldn't tell you far back enough. I'm sure there were overrated players of this caliber. Ryan Leaf coming out of college would be one, but there's a difference between overrated and a bust. And I wonder, and I'll leave it to you guys in the comments section, if where you're listening has one, or social media, all social media, at Nick Donadic, NikDonadic. Is Odell Beckham the most overrated player in NFL history? Admittedly, I don't think so. Just by way of, you have a couple of cop-out excuses. You have, he got injured multiple times. You have, oh, you know, it really changed his career, right? When he was out there in the Super Bowl with the Rams, and this is true, he was tearing it up, right? He was tearing it up out there. I think those are all kind of valid, if I'm being honest with you. So, I'm not certain that Odell is the most overrated player at that position. I'm not even at wide receiver. There are plenty of overrated players in the NFL right now. Right? I mean, for years we've made fun of primetime Kirk Cousins. It became more properly rated, but you look at the amount that the guy's been paid to do what? Right? I think this is kind of a, not a low blow. I don't think Odell Beckham is like a Derrick Rose sort of tragic career situation. Or a situation like, you know, a Brandon Roy. He just couldn't stay out there. But I think the injuries do have a significant part to play in this. I mean, the first 3 years of the guy's career, 1,300 yards, 1,450 yards, and 1,367 yards. I mean, the first year he played 12 games. He had 12 touchdowns. Look, the first 3 years of Odell Beckham's career, he had 35 touchdowns. 35. He has had 24 since. I think the New York Giants did intentionally ship him to Cleveland and say, you know what, go have fun over there. Let's see how much you enjoy it over there. Because he was a superstar. He was a celebrity in New York, right? And the catch he made against the Cowboys in a game they lost is still one of the most memorable catches in NFL history, particularly in recent memory. It's intriguing. I like the idea. I like the proposition. I think we should dig into this. I could see a YouTube video essay here, you know, Jolly Olive style or something like that, that's 20 minutes long, half hour long, or Foolish Baseball style, per se. But, yeah, no, I don't think it is Odell Beckham. Number 7 in the standout 7, let's just wrap it up and get it on out here, because as I said before, it is March. We are in free agency season, but, you know, we don't need to go overkill here. We did miss some news, however. We talked about Jason Kelce retiring. A lot of people saying he's going to be a future Hall of Famer. Time will tell on that one. Aaron Donald retired after 10 years. He will be a future Hall of Famer. I can guarantee you that. First ballot right now. An intriguing one to me is Matthew Slater. Longtime Pro Bowl special teamer with the New England Patriots has also retired. And part of me wondered, is he someone that could be a Hall of Famer? When I think of how hard it's been for them to get Devin Hester into the Hall of Fame, I find it really hard to believe that a guy who played his whole career, he forced 5 fumbles and recovered 1, and he had a combined, 190 tackles? I mean, he was a Pro Bowler. He was a Pro Bowler for 10 of 11 years from 2011 through 2021. He was a Pro Bowler in 2017 and he played 9 games. What? That doesn't even make sense. I'm not going to lie to you, that doesn't even make sense. Listed as a wide receiver, obviously, didn't exactly make his money doing that. Yeah. I'm not so sure they're going to be able to get him into the Hall of Fame, if I'm being completely honest with you. However, I do think somebody with that kind of special teams acumen should be a coach anywhere he wants to be. And I do find it interesting that he's hanging up at the same time as Bill Belichick parted ways from the organization. Maybe this was Bill's guy. You know what I mean? I imagine Bill would give a sparkling recommendation wherever they would want to hire Matthew Slater. I do find it hard to believe that they would be able to get him into the Hall of Fame. It's like getting, you know, it took a while to get a DH into the Hall of Fame for Major League Baseball. There were some people, they still won't vote for Billy Wagner. Billy Wagner's the best left-handed closer ever. You can only throw with 2 hands. That means the one that throws with his hand, he is the best ever, and he's not in the Hall of Fame. Some Hall of Fames are stingier than others, right? Admittedly, baseball is more stingy usually than football and or the NBA, particularly the NBA. But I think it's going to take a committee or it's going to take a long time if Matthew Slater is going to find his way into the NFL Hall of Fame. Either way, we're debating brass tacks. One of, if not the best special teams players ever, that's not just a return man or a kicker or a punter or something like that. Tremendous player. And congratulations to him on a great career. One more thing I wanted to get in. It got chased out by all this free agency shenanigans. I wanted to get to this so bad. Sauce Gardner beefing with Mecole Hardman. And this will be the little chaser to get you going until we talk again in the month of May. Sauce Gardner alleging, being one of the players alleging, I should say, Connor Hughes reporting that, quote, there was validated belief from the Jets that Mecole Hardman, frustrated by lack of usage, leaked game plans to several to opposition, as implied by several players, not just the Eagles, but also the Chiefs. Why would he leak it to the Eagles? The guy has no ties, to my knowledge, to the Philadelphia Eagles. Sauce Gardner tweeting, LOL, retweeting Mecole Hardman from 10 years ago. People say don't snitch. I don't see it like that. If your life on the line, I'm telling on everybody. I think this is the dumbest beef possible. Mecole Hardman, who, by the way, caught the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl and joined a club of two people to have played for the Jets and catch a touchdown in the Super Bowl. He's the first member in five-plus decades. Just a lighthearted way to end more of a serious brass tacks sort of episode. Do I think Mecole Hardman did it? I don't know. I have no idea. The only one that knows is him. I find it hilarious that Sauce Gardner thinks that he was leaking the game plan for their offense when their offense was just bad. Like, what was the excuse the other games? Because they almost beat the Chiefs, and they did beat the Eagles. So what could possibly be the reasoning behind what he's alleging? They would have beaten them even worse? Like, I don't get it. I don't understand what he stands to gain from it. Maybe he just really hated the guy. He said, you know what, this guy, man, he got over on us. He came over here and he got to go play for a Super Bowl winner. What? Remember, that Chiefs game is the one where there was, I believe it was a pass interference or a defensive hold, and there was big hubbub made that, oh, it's the Chiefs getting a superstar call again, man. Chiefs win that game by 3. So, like, you scored 20 that week. You scored 20 against the Eagles. You know how many times you scored 20 the rest of the year after that, Sauce? 3 times. 3 times the rest of the year. I don't understand. What are you so angry about? We want another win so you could drop in the draft even further? Okay. Whatever. Whatever. Shout out to Sauce Gardner. He's a good player. Does ads for Buffalo Wild Wings, which are pretty funny. Shout out to Mecole Hardman, who's still probably walking on air months after catching the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl. Either way, folks, that'll bring us to the end of episode number 192 of the Necessary Roughness podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. Again, my apologies, a little bit of a disjointed episode, but it's hard to keep up with all the motion, and we didn't want to leave anyone's team out. So everybody's team, I could have did a grading system, I guess, A through F, but it's hard. A lot of people would get C's. You know how the bell curve goes and things like that. And C's get degrees after all. Join us again May the 3rd. That is our target date. The NFL draft is going to be April 25th through the 27th in Detroit, Michigan. We're going to break it all down on the weekend of May the 3rd. And then, in all likelihood, we won't talk again until the preseason when we do NFC predictions, AFC predictions, Super Bowl prediction, and we'll get right in to the 24-25 NFL season. Hope you all are having a marvelous March and it continues that way. I hope you all have an amazing April, and I will talk to you on the first weekend of the month of May. I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic, signing off.